Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 190 for April 13th, 2009, Gripping Jobs. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2 and follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by GoToMyPC, the safe way to access your PC remotely that's as secure as online banking. For your free 30-day trial, visit gotomypc.com/twit. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to squarespace.com/twit. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 190, with a great cast of characters sitting around drinking wine and talking about the latest tech news. I'll start with our in-studio guest, just one, but I'm so glad to have her. Neha Tiwari is here. It's good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Neha, I just found out, was an intern in the last days of Tech TV. She actually was the band that played Nearer My God to Thee as the ship sank. And then went on to Revision 3, hosted Pop Siren, produced Techzilla, and we're so glad to have you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Back from 3 months in India.
Yes. A little bit of a break from life, tech.
You can give us the perspective, the Indian perspective on tech. Although you were saying that where you are in northern India wasn't that wired.
Not really. I mean, sometimes you would see people on the trains using laptops and stuff like that. The cyber cafe is still very, very popular.
That's where people go.
In India. And that's where, I mean, having a home computer is not something that's widespread other than the metros. In other cities, not as much.
Huh. The internet cafe. That's kind of like that in other parts of the world, I think.
I think so, too. When I was in China, I saw some internet cafes there, but they weren't as frequent. I didn't see them as frequently as I did in India. So, but it was interesting because I'm one of those people that wakes up and gets on their computer and is just glued to it the entire day. I'm sure a lot of you are the same way. So in India, I wasn't able to do that, and it was just interesting to go outside, get some fresh air, and interact with real people. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of fresh air and real people, from Oxford, England, our good buddy, Mr. Will Harris. Long time no see. He's got a little glass of Sancerre there. Hey, Will. Oh, no, he's lost his audio. Unmuteth thyself.
Sorry. You know, hello, it's great to be here.
It's great now that I can
I'm
see
out of practice.
You. And I can see you via Skype-a-saurus. Not only do I know you're speaking and we're not hearing, but I can see what you're drinking and when.
All the way through.
John won't let us do that. Also here from Port Angeles in the northern, westernmost part of the United States of America for the continental U.S., John C. Dvorak. Hi, John.
Hey there.
Great to have you. How was your Easter?
It's still going on.
Did you hide eggs for the little ones?
We don't actually have any little ones, but we did hide eggs, and of course now the eggs have money in them.
Gets the kids going.
So everybody's so glad to participate.
Gold coins. The leprechauns have been here. Wow. That's a great idea. I was trying to hide eggs for my kid, my 14-year-old. I said, Henry, can I hide some eggs? He said, no.
Put a couple bucks in each one or five version. He'll change his song.
You came up with a very good idea. People like how John sounds when he is in Port Angeles, when he's up in Washington State. And the reason is, John?
Because I'm using the fabulous PR40 from Heil.
The Heil PR40. Isn't it warm and luscious and delicious?
What I like about it is that, in fact, I think people should consider this when they're podcasting. It's not a condensed, so that saves you typically $100 for a little preamp. And it doesn't need a compressor. So essentially, you save like $200 right off the top for at least, I mean, you could really rack those numbers up if you want to. And the mic, I think, is around $400. So it's the equivalent of a $200 expense overall, as opposed to, when, you know, the mic I use, an AKG, cost about the same, but I need these two pieces of equipment.
Yeah, no, I like it.
So it's easier.
It's a good way to go. So how do you get the, I don't understand though, you're getting the, because it isn't a normal mic in the sense that it, I mean, it's a professional mic. So you just can plug it in right into the side of
it? No, I have an M Audio.
You still have using M Audio?
Yeah, I just bought a second one.
Oh, okay.
For up here. And the funny thing is I decided to get it online. So I scrounged around and I found some source. I mean, these things cost about $150 or something like that. And so I found a source that they were like $49.
Wow.
So I'm saying, you're refurbished, they say. So I get the thing, and it's exactly the same, exactly. And it looks like it's never been used or touched. And it's got except these big labels on the box saying B stock, you know, not for retail or something like that. And I'm happy with it. It's just, you know, it's exactly the same as the other one.
You know, I think we can thank, I don't know if it was the California state legislature or the courts for this, because Dell, I think it was selling computers that have been returned, you know, if somebody bought it and opened the box and didn't want it and returned it as new, and somebody sued and the court said, no, you can't sell that stuff as new. And as a result, all these companies have to sell this stuff that isn't really used. It's just returned or boxes open. They can't sell it as new. And so we get this great benefit, although for $50 is a big cut. I mean, most of the companies, Dell sells this stuff and doesn't give you that kind of a break.
No, this and I have to recommend this thing. I mean, people, when I first started working over at Mevio, to get up to speed on all this stuff, I remember, and this was like a couple of years ago, I remember everybody saying, no, you can't use the USB. You can't go through it under any circumstances. It sucks. You have to somehow go through. This is what this does, and I think it sounds just as good as anything I've heard that goes
fully digital. I agree. It's really a question whether you got good mic preamps in that thing, and I think it has good mic preamps. We're using it to send my audio to you, and we use an M Audio, a slightly higher end M Audio, just because that's what they had in stock. And your audio is coming out that way, so it works fine. Yeah. So you brought up, Will Harris, you brought up the first story of the day, and a surprising story. The guys who created Skype, which we use to do this show, you're on Skype, John's on Skype.
And you make it look like Will Harris is John C. Dvorak.
I know. I have to type a new lower third for him.
I'm just saying.
Now that John's watching the video, he's not so nice.
Everyone's a critical.
That they want to buy Skype back? What's the story there?
So well, according to the New York Times, anyway, Nicholas Sendstrom and Yannis Friss, who are the guys that actually started Skype, of course, sold it to eBay for, gosh, what, like $2.5 billion, $3 billion?
So it ended up being $3.1 billion after all was said and done, yeah.
And now, you know, eBay is kind of, originally bought it, I think, to integrate it with eBay so you could chat to your dealers and sellers, etc. Never really sort of did it. It's costing them stupendous amounts of money, allegedly, to keep it running.
Why did eBay buy them in the first place? It would make
well,
no
I think
sense.
They, what they wanted to do was have it so that if you were on eBay and you wanted to ask a question of your seller, which is like the number one impediment to buying something, is you want to know something, is that you could just easily call someone.
Yeah, and the number one thing sellers didn't want to do is talk to the buyers.
Actually talk to their customers, right.
Yeah.
So it was a slight disaster. But so they're now looking to buy it back, and eBay, you know, according to this story, analysts say that eBay is looking for $1.7 billion. So they're looking to get back half their money.
Oh, man.
Wow. Yeah, they want a lot of money for it. They're not going to let it go.
However, you know, they're saying that $1.7 billion, that's the value of Skype on the eBay balance sheet in 2007. So you've got to imagine that the difference between the price in 2007 and the price today in the current market is going to be looking a little bit different. These guys could get it back for less than $1 billion and probably flip it again in another two or three years.
Boy, talk about profit. And they're going to have a $2 billion profit out of this thing, $1.5 billion profit out of this thing.
I wonder, I mean, their new project, Juiced, or their semi-new project, I mean, it seems to be doing okay.
There's no money in that. Do you think there is?
No, I don't think there's money in it, but I think that, you know, they have good partnerships with networks and things like that, and they have some decent content on there.
Right. How much? I wonder how what their model is for making money on that. Do they?
Well, the model for making money is always on Juiced has always been to put ads in the content and then rev share.
I believe they have. I think they have pre-roll. If I'm not.
Yeah, they do pre-roll and overlay and that kind of thing. And they wanted to monetize the community to start generating chat around TV and then to start monetizing that kind of community. Actually, they've kind of gotten nowhere. It's kind of an open secret that nobody's buying ads. The content is all the kind of stuff you can get everywhere else for free anyway.
It's kind of junky. It's like Dukes of Hazzard quality. I mean, it's not...
Yeah, and they had, you know, the desktop client that was supposed to be the future of TV, but nobody really wanted a desktop client, and so they changed it to Flash, but then, you know, they've had to go and raise hundreds more, you know, millions of dollars to keep the thing going, and I think most people can see it tanking pretty quickly.
And when it comes to that model, I think Hulu just has it going on. I mean, a lot of people really like Hulu. I like Hulu. And
I would bet Hulu's not making money either, though. I don't know.
And you say that, but of course, Hulu isn't actually available anywhere outside of the United States.
That's a
to watch any content
Juiced
of any.
Juiced is, so, yes, Juiced is international.
Yeah.
Of course, you know a little bit about this, Will, because as the guy who runs Channel Flip, you're trying to make money in IPTV as well.
Absolutely.
Do you see Juiced as a competitor?
Not really. You know, Juiced come and sort of ask us for our content. And the general line is, you know, well, how much is it going to be worth? And the general line is, you know, we might be able to pay you a few dollars every month, which is, you know, absolutely ridiculous. So we don't really see them as a competitor at all. You know, they're not making any content. And that's what it's all about in the current day and age. As you well know, it's all about making the stuff.
Jamie's saying in our friend feed conversation that he believes Hulu is making money. Do you think so, Will? I mean, you know what it would take to make money in that
space. Sure.
You think they're making money.
So the reason Hulu can make money is because they're basically selling ads on what's already like a sunk cost.
That's a good point. The only cost to them at this point is bandwidth.
Right.
So the cost of making the content is like zero to go online because they've already sunk that cost for TV. So anything they can make out of it online is just covering bandwidth and making profit.
It's incremental profit.
Yeah. Now, whether you can maintain that going forward when there's less money in TV budgets is a kind of different question.
I love Hulu, but I have to say, I don't know how many ads. I mean, there's not a lot of ads in there.
Well, there's, again, I mean, with every show that you watch,
there's
30-second pre-roll. And I've even seen, I think they also employ mid-roll, too.
Yeah, they do. They'll have their interstitial ads.
Yeah, so I mean, I would almost say that it's heavily advertised.
Compared to other
compared
internet
to
content.
Compared to other networks that are doing content.
Will, how is the ad sales going at Channel Flip? Are people buying...
It's really interesting. I mean, without getting sort of too inside baseball, it's really interesting that, you know, TV spend in the UK is down drastically, online spend is up drastically, and in particular, you know, online video is really the only area where the market is holding up.
That's been our experience too. Our advertising, we can't.
What you see is that, you know, generic media, the sort of MSNs of the world, see their CPMs tanking because you have no idea who the audience is. But where you can connect with a specialist audience and you know who that audience is, you know, with your podcast, you know all the kind of people that are going to be listening to this. You know all the demographic data, you do all the surveys, and that audience is really, really valuable. Whereas, you know, a generic 10 million people turn up to MSN, it's like, well, who the hell are these people?
We're going to come back in just a bit and talk more about Hitter's been twacked. I mean, Twacker's been hitted. I shouldn't have had that wine before the show. Twitter has been hacked twice by the same Brooklyn kid who says, yeah, I did it. It was me. I was the guy. You know, we kind of knew because he sent everybody to his site. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Also, they're closing the pub on the Microsoft campus and the employees are getting together to save it. Before we do that, though, I want to mention our friends at Audible.com. Audible's a great place to go to get your audio entertainment. You love podcasts? You're going to love Audible.com. Audio books, 50,000 plus titles. It's the world's greatest library of audio books. And I think it even does them a disservice to say audio books. Audible is really, these are performances. Some of the best readers reading some of the most amazing literature. It is a wonderful resource. You can learn while you're, you know, doing things that normally be completely time wasted, like sitting in the car, driving, going to the gym, working out. Give it a try right now. You get the Audible Platinum account by going to audible.com/twit2. Audible.com/twit2. That's when you sign up for a platinum, that's what I have. You get two books a month. I go through two books a month, so I need that. And you could choose from any of the books here. You get a credit. Some of the books are two credits, but you can. But it's an amazing thing. Since we're eating wine, I'm drinking wine right now. I think we should be talking about a little bit about food. And I'm going to recommend a wonderful book. Actually, this is a TV program. Have you ever seen The Splendid Table? They have TV shows on here, too. The audio from the TV shows. This is Lynn Rossetto Casper's incredible TV show. And this is the one where she interviews the author of Julie and Julia, 365 days, 524 recipes, and one tiny apartment. I'm actually going to recommend that book because we've recommended it before on Jumping Monkeys. But what a story. This is a woman who ended up deciding to cook every recipe in Julia Child's famous The Art of French Cooking, 524 recipes in 1 year. And it's her story of doing that. But these are just an example. I mean, it's everything from soup to nuts. I mean, you can business, classics, education, fiction, history, young adults. It's great for the kids. Mysteries, thrillers, even romance. And of course, lots of science and technology and sci-fi and fantasy titles. I want you to try it right now. Go to audible.com/twit2. Sign up for the platinum account. You're going to love it. audible.com/twit2. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. There's an example of an advertiser that just can't get enough of podcasts. They're buying a lot of podcasts. They supported us now. We're in our second year of advertising with them. I think it's what you said, Will. I think that it's almost a contrarian market. We're doing better than we did when the economy was good.
Well, exactly. Everybody likes a good bit of specific advertising. And, you know, when you guys are talking about Audible, you know, it's really useful. You know, I've got a plan, which I signed up for through this. And, you know,
Great. I didn't know that.
Yeah, of course.
That's awesome. Very cool.
I'm listening to a little Terry Pratchett. I met Terry Pratchett last week.
You
I
did?
Got me back into a Terry Pratchett
oh,
kick.
I'm so jealous. Terry Pratchett wrote the Discworld books. He is one of the best, funniest fantasy writers. Huge fan. Suffering from Alzheimer's.
Terrible, terrible, but still very with it. I'm going to horrendously name drop Bing and just go that when I was at the exclusive screening of the new Red Dwarf last week, he turned up.
Bobby Llewellyn was wonderful. There. Did you say hi to Bobby Lou?
Absolutely. I got in on his ticket.
Congratulate him on the relaunch of Red Dwarf. That's such
fantastic
a good
job, I thought.
Really? You liked it? I haven't seen it. We haven't seen it here yet.
Nah, you wouldn't. I hear you can get it.
I have to get on the ball and start downloading somewhere. I'll find it.
Yeah.
That is great. Yeah. So how was Sir Terry Pratchett?
Very well. He was giving red carpet interviews all night, even though it was nothing to do with him. He sort of turned up, I think, and saw the sort of red carpet where the where all the camera crews were, and was like, red carpet, I must need to be on that.
I'm Terry Pratchett.
Proceeded to spend the whole evening giving interviews and things, which is fantastic.
He, I saw a weird article about him and some helmet that a brain helmet that he's wearing. Did you see this? The magic light helmet? That he's hoping will let him write because despite the Alzheimer's, he's still writing, but he says it's very slow going. He might write a sentence a day. So he's using this bizarre light helmet. Dr. Gordon Dougal invented it, and it's supposed to slow Alzheimer's. I think it sounds pretty wonderful.
Well, it's listen, if listeners are jonesing for a bit of Terry Pratchett, Audible has a great selection of Pratchett that's read by a guy called Nigel Planer.
Yes.
And Nigel Planer's very famous for being in The Young Ones, which was a kind of seminal British comedy of the 80s.
Didn't know that.
And Nigel Planer does a very, very good Discworld book.
There's the light helmet. It's got, you know what? This is a joke. It's got three muffin fans from a desktop computer on it. It looks absolutely insane. But anything that helps Terry, right, I'm all for. Yeah, I listened to... in fact, I have, I probably have a dozen Audible Discworld books. The first one's on there, The Color of Magic. That's the one you should start with.
Yeah.
You meet Rincewind and, God, I love that stuff.
And also Mort. Mort is my favorite, actually.
Love Mort.
The introduction of death and such.
But I like Rincewind because he's like a Merlin, but he's completely inept and terrified and goofy. And it's just great. He's like a bad, bad wizard. Like a wizard is no good. at it. He just it sucks.
Incompetent.
Incompetent wizard. let's talk a little bit about, I don't know. I'm kind of sandbagging you with this because this story just came out. The Spitfire Club was going to open on Microsoft's Entertainment and Devices Division campus. They were going to open a pub and they for Microsofties to go to, I guess because they're afraid of going out in the real world. I don't know. And they pulled the plug on the project. The owner, Jonathan Sposato, says, "I'm completely stunned and disappointed by the decision. I'm confused by the sudden change of heart." Spitfire apparently is a pub also in Seattle's Belltown neighborhood. Ever been there, John, the Spitfire pub?
No, never.
Is this a good idea to have a pub on the campus at Microsoft? See, companies do this so you'll never leave.
I think yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure a lot of the people who work at Microsoft spend a lot of hours there. So it might have been a good idea.
They've been doing this, developing this for more than a year. There was a competitive bidding process just weeks before it was open. He had to fire the 22 employees he'd hired.
That's crazy. I mean, I find it bizarre that Microsoft can have a gun club, but not a pub.
They have a gun club?
Well, apparently there's a video on YouTube that has Microsoft Gun Club April 2009 finale from their Second Amendment day.
That's hysterical.
So, go Microsoft.
So here's a piece of news that's kind of interesting. That's not being undercovered.
Yes, sir.
The there's these cables have been clipped down in the San Jose area.
Yes, this was sabotage.
And so I did a column in Market Watch on this, and then I got a note from someone saying South Carolina also had a similar situation. None of this has been reported. And then Eric, of our channel Dvorak, Eric, my son. He mentions that there was apparently a clip between Washington, D.C. and some, I guess, some part of Virginia. And so it looks like there's somebody's out there.
I have a theory on this.
To see what the heck's, to see what the results are, I guess.
I have a theory on this. So for those who didn't know, because it was kind of a local story, San Jose, South Bay, the Silicon Valley's phone service, including cell service, completely died. Was out for most of the day, tens of thousands of people without any service.
50,000, actually.
They discovered that it was intentional sabotage. But get this. This is where the fiber cables are. The person would have had to move a fairly hefty manhole cover. They'd have to know where they're going, right? I mean, there's a lot of manhole covers. They move the right manhole cover, climb down. It's about 2 feet of water they'd be standing in. They'd have to know which cables to cut. They did all of that. This is not just random vandalism.
Right.
So I bet you're thinking the same thing I'm thinking, John C. Dvorak.
What?
Terrorists.
Well, I wasn't. Yeah, that's what I was thinking, actually. But it seems like, I don't know what kind of terrorists it would be. I mean, it could be blackmailers or extortionists.
First of all, you'd have to know. I mean, this is not, I wouldn't know how to do this.
Non-trivial.
Non-trivial. Why
would you do it, though?
I think it's a rehearsal.
I mean, what's the benefit?
It's a rehearsal. It's the same reason the bad guys put software on the electrical grid. We discovered this last week. Wall Street Journal published a big story saying, there's software designed to shut down the electrical grid on many computers on an electrical grid, never used. It's sitting there. So my theory is, if you're bad guys, if you're either terrorists or foreign nationals, and you're planning, warfare, you need to know how this stuff works. What you do is you try it out. You do a rehearsal. You see if it works. And you hope that it's three isolated incidents, that nobody's going to put two and two together. You got to hope that I hope the Department of Homeland Security is at least as smart as John C. Dvorak. But I think that's what's going on. Why? I mean, who else would be doing this? You think it's blackmail, John?
Well, I mean, there are extortionists out there that pull this kind of thing. And, they do it with oil refineries. They do it all, we're going to do this and that if you don't give us money. And we probably would never find out if that was the case, because who the heck is going to tell us that, right, somebody paid somebody off, in the situation like this? I'm not sure. What?
Yeah, we don't know. I guess it could.
But
be.
What the things I'd like to get a call out. Anybody has any? If this is anybody sees this happening anyplace else in the country, I think these are all typically locally reported, And nobody seeing it as a national story. I mean, I did write it up in MarketWatch as what I thought was a national story.
It is a national story.
And
the fact that they were able to cut this fiber, they knew where to go. They were able to.
Well, I also pointed out the fact that, like, for example, we have a lot of fiber up here, and it's very clearly marked. I mean, it's along the side of the road.
Cut here to disconnect phone service?
Well, no, they tell you where the cable is, you know, because they don't want people with backhoes ripping it out. And so, you know, it doesn't take a genius to find this stuff.
The outage affected some cell phones, internet access, and about 52,200 Verizon household landlines in Santa Cruz and San Jose counties. Cell phone networks by Verizon, Nextel, and Sprint, and some AT&T networks were also out. I mean, this pretty effective. It was a little too easy, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think that's really what the problem is. And I think it's, I think people,
ATMs,
I think it's vulnerable.
ATMs
vulnerable.
Knocked out. San Jose, St. Louis Regional Hospital in Gilroy canceled elective surgeries.
Wow.
I mean, it's a big deal when this kind of thing happens.
I think it can be devastating to any community when something like this goes down. And people don't understand the magnitude of how important it is to address these things. I think people see this not as a direct act of maybe something like terrorism, and therefore they don't address it as that or as a major issue.
Well, I hope, John, that you hear from somebody, because I think that this certainly raises that specter.
Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's some other outages here and there that we just haven't been reported, because it's always seen as a local thing. But I mean, the idea would be, just guessing, that you'd want to take a kind of map the fiber network, see which are important, and find ones that intersect. Or in other words, you'd have a whole area that could possibly be blacked out, like right. A whole city, or let's say, right. By two cuts someplace. Because everything, the network is not. So, I mean, it used to be, well, the internet's supposed to be redundant, and it was designed for taking an A-bomb and all this stuff. That's not true anymore.
I don't know if it was ever true, but it's certainly not true.
It may
now.
Not have been ever true, but whatever the case is, it's not that redundant.
Yeah, no kidding. If you can knock it out by clipping a couple of things. Speaking of bad actors, Mikey Mooney is a name you might want to keep in mind. Mikey with two Y's. He's 17 years old. He has a little website called stalkdaily.com, STALK. Don't go there.
Don't go there.
Don't go there. He created a cross-site scripting exploit that took advantage of a flaw in Twitter. How many flaws are there going to be in Twitter? How complicated is Twitter? And why is it that it keeps getting hacked?
Why do they keep adding weird stuff now when you tweet something, you get a drop down that says your thing has been updated, and then it goes back up.
I haven't seen that because I haven't used Twitter in a while. I'm ready to leave.
You hate Twitter.
I hate it.
It's been a little wonky.
It's really wonky. Fail whales and over.
I get a lot of overcapacity. Twitter is overcapacity. Yeah.
Well, that's of course.
I mean, it happens, but it can be really frustrating too.
It's what's his name, Ashton Kutcher. It's the Ashton Kutcher phenomenon.
Yeah, it's really weird to hear about
tweeting pictures of Demi Moore's butt.
Yeah, that'll bring a site down.
The Ashton Kutcher effect.
It's the A+K effect. So this guy Mikey says, I am aware of the attack, and yes, I am behind the attack. Mikey described how he carried it out to, I think it was to
you think that's his voice?
Well, what do you think his voice sounds like?
Hi.
No, I don't think it's
I think he's got a macho voice.
Oh, he's 17, so young man. The voice must have dropped by now.
I think Mikey doesn't get out much.
I think Mikey's is a fine citizen. You're just berating him for no good reason. Mikey, Leo, you know where
he is. You just don't want to get hacked, John.
So wait a minute. What does Mikey's virus actually do?
Okay. Mikey says, I am the person who coded the XSS, that's a cross-site scripting exploit, which then acted as a worm when it auto-updated a user's profile and status, which then infected other users who viewed their profile. I did this out of boredom, to be honest. I usually like to find vulnerabilities within websites and try not to cause too much damage, but, start a worm or something to give the developers an insight on the problem. and while doing so, promoting myself and my website. Mikey, not too bright. Mikey pointed everybody to his website. Mikey basically said, I did it in big red letters.
Yeah.
Mikey expecting not like
the door
from the guy.
No, Frick is more like he's going to be Professor Frick when he grows up, I think.
Infected users' passwords were not compromised, according to Mikey. Anyway, although I do notice that Twitter said change your password. You might want to change your password.
Well, it's only if you were affected by it, though.
Right. And they also suggest killing cookies, clearing your cache, changing your password.
Right.
And deleting all those messages saying,
go to this site.
go to stalkdaily.com.
.com, right. But yeah, when I read the story, it was the first thing I checked, though.
Did you go to stalkdaily.com?
No, I didn't. And thank God. Like, I had no such hacking done.
James?
Nor did any of my friends that I saw on my feed, at least.
I didn't get hacked.
Isn't this a felony?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be it. A felony. It's against the wire. What are they probably still have this? The wire fraud rules. I think that's that's what they use to prosecute. They've used that to prosecute people. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some wire fraud rules that just keeps people free. But anyway,
but is it the case that you could only get hacked if you actually went to Twitter.com? If you're just using...
Hold on. One at a time. Sorry. Finish your thought, John, and then I'll let you...
The question is, why would he admit to this? Apparently, he doesn't know it's a felony, maybe. But the second thing, the bigger question, and always is the bigger question, why hasn't somebody knocked on his door?
Somebody must have by now. We know he lives in Brooklyn. We know his name. We know his website.
Yeah, there's plenty of information about him.
He says, I also, I have run iloveads.com.
Yeah, that's, in fact, he's using, the media now to still promote what he's doing. He hasn't stopped.
No.
Mikey Mooney's still at it.
And of course, our law enforcement is doing what exactly?
I hear there were some lines in San Jose that were cut. I don't know. Is that related?
The tweet that you would get, here it is. I'll go to Stalk Daily so you don't have to. It's got, looks like it's got a picture of Elmer Fudd. And here's what he posts on the site. I have came clean and accepted the responsibility for the worm. Read the interview here.
I have came clean.
He looks like he completely stole the code from Twitter.
Yeah.
It's even got the same... Let's see if it's got the Twitter terms of service.
Yeah. It basically was... It's like a clone, I think, of Twitter.
He stole everything. Let's see the privacy. Stalk Daily provides this privacy policy. I bet you it's exactly the same as the Twitter privacy policy.
Yeah.
So well, you know, if his terms of service require that users of this website accept the worm, I mean, I think you can get around the felony thing with the terms of service based on the way case law's been going
no.
in the United States in particular.
When you use this site, you accept the installation of software on your system to perform any deed whatsoever. Click here. Really? You think you could waive?
I think you could, with the way it's being done. I mean, the way they say, well, you know, the shrink wrap law, the terms of service and all this other stuff, the courts uphold it.
Yeah.
So the question is, well, what if you put it in the terms of service that you're just going to, you know, hack people? So, you know, if you use this website, we're allowed to take your credit card number. Why not?
Yeah. We could do anything we want to you. Wow. You think he's that smart that he might have written that in?
Yeah, I'm always waiting for somebody to do that. I haven't seen it yet. Maybe.
Interesting. I think that the courts would say, well, nice try. But, all right, let me see.
Yeah, he'd probably play up the whole I'm a kid thing. I was just a kid. It's a harmless worm.
I'm 17. What are you going
to
do?
All you have to do is change your password. I didn't do any real harm.
Let's see. First paragraph. Twitter provides its privacy policy to inform users of our policies and procedures regarding this collection, use, and disclosure of personally identifiable information. Stalk Daily's privacy policy. Stalk Daily provides its privacy policy to inform users of our policies and procedures regarding the collection, use, and disclosure. It's the same! He just did a search and replace on Twitter.
Yeah.
This site is not directed to persons under 13. It'd be really great if we could find in here a clause that says, and by the way, we put a worm on your system. And by the way,
you've been hacked.
It's exactly the same. That's pretty bold of Mikey.
It is.
Mikey has a weak grasp of jurisprudence, but he is a bold young lad.
Yeah, but no one's knocked at the door.
Well, we don't know that. He might be in custody as we speak.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, we don't quite
know. We can guess.
Where the fate of Mikey Mooney lays.
Jackson Pollock, not his real name, says in our Facebook page, that's standard. Did it in high school. Got everybody's its learning accounts. Basically, you just edit all the dir to help to a Twitter dir and the code and implement it. Change the user password boxes, scripts to save input, redirect to twitter.com. It's easy. Signed, Jackson Pollock.
Your voice, this voice of yours.
That's my nerdy. That's your real name, Jackson? All right. He says this is his real name.
Jackson Pollock?
Yeah. Huh. Didn't know the painter was also a hacker. It's amazing what you learn on Twit these days. What would you like? A little cup of coffee? Anything?
No, I'm good.
Anything we could do for you here?
Oh, thank you.
See, John, if you
I
were
can
here.
Hear now.
Though the headphones. Oh, I didn't know you couldn't hear.
No,
the headphones
hear
are actually not connected
well,
to anything, but you can listen all you want.
Yeah.
Are you hearing
Those
anything?
Those headphones are terrible.
Are you hearing anything?
I can't hear anything.
No, still. They're not connected to anything. They're not over there for a reason. Just tell me if you can't
if
hear.
If you could just put them up, then I could probably hear better.
I didn't know you couldn't hear.
Yeah, it's a little hard for me to.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
To hear the boys on the phone. Men on the phone, rather.
Boys to men. Can you hear them now? They're being very quiet. How's that Sancerre? Is
hey
that
guys?
Delicious?
Speak.
Hello. Hello.
That was weird because John spoke, but Will's mouth moved. I'm very confused now. Willie, I think you're muted.
Yeah, he's...
No, I'm back.
There you go.
It just this connection stinks.
Both of your connections aren't too good. You know, what's ironic is you're using our
15 up.
I know. I don't understand it because you're breaking up a little bit too.
Huh.
And you're on our very fancy new Ethernet in the first mile connection.
Wow, really? You have Ethernet in the first mile?
Yeah.
He's always got these new things. This is every
That's
week
mental.
Something new.
It is mental. But you see, with Skypeosaurus, you don't know about Skypeosaurus, Will. We have four different computers, each running their own instance of Skype. And so we can have each one has its own, you know, video. So we can see all the video. And then we got Ethernet the first mile. 9 megabits up and down. True, actual, rock solid. It's like, it's
That's
really
almost
great.
Like being back in college. I remember being in college and I had 100 meg in my room.
Oh, man.
And you could get 100 meg up and down the academic network in the UK. And I remember getting like the entire open office disk ISO in about 45 seconds. It was awesome.
Front page of the Wall Street Journal on Saturday. Steve Jobs maintains grip at Apple.
That headline sounds like so evil.
It doesn't sound, it sounds like he's not
he
losing
his grip. Yeah.
Like, well, it immediately sounds like Darth Vader, doesn't it? When you hear like holding your grip, you immediately think of like, I have you now.
Yes. It's like evil sounding. It's like he's a Sith Lord and he has hold of Apple still, you know.
It's not maintain control. It's not maintains influence. It's not continues to brand. It's holds grip.
Yeah.
Well.
You just see the fist.
And I thought Microsoft was the evil empire.
They say insiders say that Jobs is still running the show, that the board is in direct contact with Jobs and his doctors, that they all anticipate Steve will come back at the end of June. John, do you find that credible?
No.
But I do only because if they said that and it didn't happen, we've talked about this before, but wouldn't that be kind of bad?
I'm sure that the lawyers, if let's say that this is not
100% accurate.
What if it's disinformation?
I would suspect that the lawyers have been consulted before they say anything about anything, I would think.
And wouldn't the lawyers say, well, to avoid exposure, you should only tell the truth?
Well, you say that, but how often have they told the truth about this whole
harshness they said, and maybe they are telling the truth?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Because it's a prediction.
Do you have the exact comment that we can look at? I mean,
Yeah. You want me to read the, this is the, you know what? Maybe we could parse the quote. Maybe that's the issue. Maybe it's a question of getting the exact right sentence. So let me pull up the Wall Street Journal. Oh, I hate it when they make me want to log in.
I think it's actually really strategic for them to publish something like this.
Even if it
even if it's not true, because if something happens, or let's say if his health fails further, then it's not like someone's going to say, but you said you were going to come back, and that's why I invested more money in your stock.
Well, that's the risk is that a stockholder lawsuit, if they say he's going to come back and the stockholders, you know, Apple's stock is going up.
Right. But it did take a hit when, you know, he was stepping down.
Well, but it's back like quite a bit. It's had, in fact, since December, Apple's stock is up considerably.
Maybe they're
oddly enough.
They're trying to ride that wave by just like fueling the fire with this news. You know?
Well,
I'm not
so
saying
risky.
Apple's like evil. Don't get me wrong, but
It seems like that would be a very risky thing to do. I'm sorry. I'm still trying to pull up this article. I subscribe. I actually pay for the Wall Street Journal, and I have a login, and I can read this article in full. But it always wants me to log in again, and I don't remember my password, and it's just a pain in the tuchus. You know, it's weird. If you do a Google News search for these stories, Google has a link to the full story on Wall Street Journal. Somehow,
yeah, it's like a weird loophole. I've noticed that too.
I just don't understand it. So let me go through Google News. VentureBeat is saying, well, I guess they're echoing the Wall Street Journal. Let's look at the Wall Street Journal article. It may be that you might be right, John. If you parse it carefully, they may not be saying anything. Mr. Jobs didn't respond to requests for comment. Apple spokesman Steve Dowling said, quote, Steve continues to look forward to returning to Apple at the end of June.
Which makes absolutely no guarantees that he will.
He's just looking forward to it.
I think it's very, it's very carefully worded.
All right, let's see what the other quotes are. Phil Schiller says, "We're just trying to do what we do every day." And that doesn't say anything, does it? Maybe the
that's
journal.
Good.
Yeah, that's really non-committal.
That's informative.
Yeah.
It's probably one of those things that's designed to sound reassuring without actually giving any reassurance.
Yeah. Now, they're quoting insiders also who say that Jobs is still closely involved in key aspects of running the company.
Insiders who are not named and therefore could not possibly be liable in court.
Insiders. I'm trying to find, there is a quote in here that they are in touch with his doctors. Let me just see if I can find that.
Or like that they're working with his doctors.
They're in constant touch.
They're in constant touch.
Here it is. People familiar with Apple's operations, again, you know, unnamed, say they still expect to see Mr. Jobs return in June. Some of these people also say members of Apple's board of directors are monitoring the situation directly, communicating regularly with Mr. Jobs' physicians. The author of this article is Yukari Iwatani Kane. I think the journal has pretty good reporters, but do you think that Kane got suckered by Apple insiders?
Well, it wouldn't be the first time Apple has rolled out unnamed insiders to not confirm or not deny any rumor that may or may not be the case. I mean, we've had so many cases where, you know, like this, you know, the famously, you know, whatchamacallit, Goldman on CBS.
Oh, Jim Goldman just got completely.
You know,
and we know Jim worked at Tech TV as our business reporter, and I'd be honest with you, he always had a fondness for the public relations report, you know, the press release. I don't know how to put this. Yeah, he kind of had a fondness for that.
Which is not very good.
Fondness for the PR. Yeah. Talking about talks which might not be talks, which might not be reassuring, did you see that allegedly the Yahoo CEO, Carol Bartz, and Steve Ballmer had a face-to-face this week to discuss possible search partnerships?
Yeah. Once again, they're doing that.
According to sources closest to Yahoo, the discussions are not about acquisition, but are about some kind of partnership that will involve Microsoft taking all the value in Yahoo without actually paying any money for it.
is that your quote, or is that actually what
I
said?
No, I made the last bit up.
I like that. That might be the most honest quote I've heard.
Well, why buy the company when you can do a search partnership, which is all you really want anyway?
Yeah.
That's actually very smart.
Yeah, I mean,
well, you're getting what you want. You're
but
not
don't actually,
the
what
access.
They really wanted was the ad network, wasn't it? Wasn't the ad network what they really wanted?
Well, same thing. Search and ads are the same thing these days.
Oh, they are.
Absolutely. Sorry. What's the point of search without ads? What's the point of ads without search? You might argue.
I don't know. Search, you're looking for something.
Yeah, but the only way to monetize a search is with an ad.
Hmm. So if they did it, okay. Well, I'm just saying that. When you say a search deal, like, you know, Yahoo for a while had a search deal with Google where it was Google search, wasn't Google ads. So you're saying if they're saying a search deal, they mean a search and ads deal.
Yeah, that's the only way you'd ever make any money. Otherwise, you'd just be paying money to get people to search using your search engine, which I can't see would be that interesting.
I don't know.
I don't know either. I just, this is the story. This is the vampire of tech stories. It just will
not.
Well,
this is the next one developing is the IBM Sun story.
I thought that was dead.
Well, now they're wondering if McNeely's going to come back and take over the company and things like that.
So the story was that McNeely wanted to sell to IBM. No, Schwartz wanted to sell to IBM. McNeely did not.
Right, because it's his baby.
And Schwartz, who's the current CEO, realized the writing was on the wall. And said, let's take the money and run. So you think Scott McNeely will kick Jonathan Schwartz out and take the company back?
Well, that's what a lot of people think.
Interesting. Now, this is very similar, isn't it, to the Yahoo deal where Jerry Yang didn't want to sell.
Right.
Founder's remorse.
Yeah.
And as CEO, when you're pushing hard for a sale.
The opposite situation, because we got the guy who did want to sell. No matter what you do, you can't win.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard to be tenable as a CEO when you're pushing really hard for a sale and then the sale doesn't happen. It's like, we're going to be fine anyway. And it's like, well, if we're going to be fine anyway, why are you pushing for a sale so hard?
We haven't heard a lot from Carol Bartz. This must be her first action going to talk to Steve Ballmer. They probably know each other from the good old days. Let's take a break. We're going to come back and talk about the Palm Pre. Rumor has it might be coming sooner. Then later, which would be a very good thing, not just for the Palm, but for people who are trying to decide, well, should I get an iPhone or should I get a Palm Pre? We can expect a new iPhone in June. What should the timing be for the iPhone killer from Palm? Before we talk about that, though, let me mention our friends at Squarespace.com. Squarespace is a great place to do your blog. I'm moving my stuff over to Squarespace.com. It's a hosted blogging solution that is just fantastic. If you go to squarespace.com/twit right now, you can see a little bit. In fact, you can actually try it free for 2 weeks, no credit card or anything. Create an account instantly. See the hundreds of templates, beautiful templates. But once you've got the template, then how customization works. It's beautiful. They're using a lot of Ajax to make it. You literally can drag and drop column widths, you know, slide it over. But now that's for beginners. If you're a CSS expert, you can get right into the CSS and customize to your heart's desire. A very great administrative UI. I've used them all from all the blogs. This one's the best I've ever seen. And it comes with, now I don't want to say blogs because it's not just blogs. It has a blog module, which by the way, supports import and export for WordPress, for Blogger, for movable type, and for Typepad. So your data isn't locked in. It's easy to move in and easy to move out should you choose. There's a forum. Great forum software. And imagine your website, you have all of this functionality. Photo gallery, a form builder, there's Google Maps integration, there's Discus integration. I use Discus as my commenting system. Like that was my concern when we were talking about moving over. I said, yeah, I'd love to move over. I like everything, but I want to continue to use my Discus comment system. They said, no problem. One line of JavaScript, it's easy. The cloud architecture of the design makes it very speedy. And very stable. And should the traffic suddenly ramp up, you know, you got dug or tweeted, it handles it. And that's one of the reasons I want to move it over there, because every time we send a lot of traffic to Twit, it kills Leofil and vice versa. They're on the same server. Great website tracking, built-in search engine optimization. Give it a try. It's free. Squarespace.com/twit. And then if you decide to buy, use Twit as the offer code. You'll save 10%. No credit card necessary. To try it, squarespace.com. So article in afterdawn.com, which was for a long time a great site for kind of information about ripping DVDs and so forth. They're saying it may be out. The Palm Pre may be out in May. According to Bright Hand, Sprint employees have been granted no vacation time in the month of May. This is that same story that we heard at AT&T when the iPhones come out. The expected release date, May 17th. May 17th. That would be very interesting. And an interesting strategy, too, because I think everybody agrees that in the June time frame, you're going to see a new iPhone. Which is better for Palm? Is it better to release the Pre before or after Apple updates its iPhone? Everybody's very interested in what Apple's going to do with the third generation iPhone. That 3.0 software is very popular. Will, are you still using your iPhone?
Oh, I never put it down. It's one of those things where you kind of don't realize how you could possibly have lived your life before it actually happened. Before you got the iPhone, like how did you manage to work or exist? So, I still use it. I think, you know, the Palm Pre is going to have it hard because it will have, you know, a really nice big market splash in, you know, I think May is looking like a pretty likely time frame from what I know. And then it's just going to get, I don't want to say it's going to get blown away in June by the new iPhone, but Apple's going to have, I think, probably something pretty compelling for the new iPhone in June. And so, the Pre might have a really nice window. It's certainly better for the Pre to come before the new iPhone, I would say, rather than after the new iPhone, because there's every chance that it could, it could be dead before it's alive in that case.
let me think about this. Now, of course, you know, there are other iPhone killers. There was the BlackBerry Storm, which was terrible. And the Samsung Instinct, terrible. Is it better for them? I don't know. I think you probably want to come out before the iPhone. I think you're right. What about Neha? Are you an iPhone user?
I'm not.
You're a BlackBerry?
I'm a BlackBerry Pearl user.
It comes down to that, doesn't it? It's BlackBerry or iPhone. Those are the choices.
It really is. And, you know, I've been using it for a long time. I had a job a little while ago where they gave me an iPhone to use. Nice. So I used it for a couple of months and I liked it. I was originally very anti-iPhone because, you know, it's like you go out in a social situation and everyone just has their iPhone out and it's like this weird.
Well, that's why I'm anti-Twitter, because it's kind of that, you know, they're all Twittering. What they're doing.
It's a little annoying. I'm sorry.
It's very annoying.
I just think it kind of takes out the fun of.
But people do that with BlackBerries too. You can't deny.
Okay,
that.
Yeah, no, and I tweet from my BlackBerry as well.
So there you go. So
like
that's
that.
Just so, as annoying.
So I understand that. But I'm curious. Like, I wonder. Do you think that some people who may have resisted the iPhone, like maybe, you know, really anti Apple PC people, do you think that they may really go for the Pre versus?
I'm really interested in the Pre. I'd love to.
I would love to too. And I think it just looks really simplistic. And
I thought it was called the Pre. I'm sorry.
Is it Pre? I don't think you'd name it.
There's
Pre.
The line over the E. So
it's Pre.
There's the line over.
John,
the E.
Why
so
would
I
you?
Think it's long.
If
E.
Your company's going down. And this is your last best hope,
right? Pre bankruptcy, or pray for help. One of the two. Why would you name the thing either one of those?
Both of them suck. But
Pray, it's not the greatest name.
Pray must be is a, I think marginally worse.
Pray,
I pray. Mm-hmm. We pray this will save the company.
We pray that. But I
great
mean,
joy. Which
as far as design and everything, just from the gallery and things that you can just tell on a very superficial level. It looks nice enough. I like that it's kind of a slider phone, too. I like that.
Yeah. Well, it's got a nice touch screen. You still get a keyboard.
Yeah. I think that's something that, I mean, do you have an iPhone? Of course you do. Do you miss having a keyboard?
No.
Like a real tactile keyboard?
I've gotten really, you know, when I first got it, I kind of went back to the BlackBerry for a while because I really couldn't type on the thing.
See, that killed me.
And you know what? You have to trust in the Steve. You have to let the Steve flow through you. And what happens is, as you type, you're typing all the wrong letters because it's impossible. Because especially with my fingers, you can't. But you just trust in the Steve. And then at the end of the word, you will have typed X3419L2 and it will say hello. It just knows what you meant. And you just hit space and it goes on. You've got to trust. You don't trust. That's your problem.
I don't. Oh, I get it. I like the feeling of buttons. I'm a very tactile person and I like having the buttons for keyboards. That's why I've stayed with BlackBerry.
What, John?
I'm just saying. I got a message from someone the other day that believes this too, you know, the you know, believe in the force. And I couldn't read it. It was just a bunch of crap. I mean, just like, it was unreadable.
See, that's what I'm
this
saying.
Reminds me a lot of that. What was the Newton? Remember that? There was a joke,
yeah.
You know.
You remember the joke?
I wish it, no, some, I don't remember.
I remember it. How many Newtons does it take to screw in a light bulb? Farm.
Right. Some.
That's exactly
that's
that.
Very good.
Was it farm?
I think what so many of these sort of handset manufacturers miss is that, you know, the handset is really only 3/4 of the experience or half the experience. The other half the experience is your desktop interaction.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, with mobile me, okay, so it sucked to start with, but now you have auto updating, you know, synchronizing over the air 24/7 from your computer to your phone. You've got all your music back and forth really, really easily. You've got an easy way of transferring apps and getting new apps and doing, you know, the actual phone hardware is now like such a relatively small part of the experience compared to the platform and the computer integration. And I just don't see that Palm has like any plan for doing that beyond some kind of open source sort of developer store, which, you know, which they haven't made any attempt as far as I can see to integrate particularly well with any platform.
I mean, don't you agree though? I mean, back in its day, Palm Pilots and stuff, they did have pretty good.
Oh, they owned.
They owned. So, I mean, what's not to say that this too will have great desktop integration and things like that?
Lots.
Well,
yeah. Where's Jeff Hawkins when we need him?
Well, true. He's off inventing a machine brain.
Right.
Interface.
And he's the guy behind the whole thing. And that's why they rocked in the early days. And
but you got to say that what they did was smart is they went out and they got John Rubinstein and all the iPhone engineers over to do this. So a lot of the guys who were instrumental in the design of the original iPhone worked on the pre.
We'll see.
It'd be very,
I'm reminded of that BlackBerry clunker that you've got there.
Oh, the Storm. What a piece of junk.
I was very disappointed by that. Yeah. I was thinking of getting the Storm, but then when I played with it, I was like,
awful.
No, I think I'm just going to stick with the Pearl. The Pearl's still good.
I'm not a Pearl. I like the Curve, but you know, I think the Bold and the 8900, the newer BlackBerrys.
How many phones do you have?
The Bold is the daddy.
How many
the Bold
do
is
you
my father.
Run.
No, well, I feel like it's kind of, you know, it's funny. For a long time, I really resisted the whole phone thing, and I had one phone. But anytime I go anywhere, especially because of the radio show, right? Anytime I go anywhere, all of the radio station executives and salespeople, all they ever want to talk about is cell phones. And I realized for the non-geek, the cell phone is technology, right? It's the one they're most into, they're most aware of. And so as a result, I said, I think I better know more about cell phones. And it's turned out actually to be it was a good move. But it does require, I have accounts with every carrier.
Oh God!
I
know it's expensive.
That's
but look
expensive.
At this. Here's the Android. This is the Google phone.
Let me see. I kind of like the Android just because it's kind of funky.
Yeah, I like it. I guess here it is. That's where.
And I thought it was sitting in the chair.
In the chair. It's a giant. No, and it's our. It says sorry. Process Android. Process A-Core is not responding. I mean, this happens. All the time, the battery life dies. I mean, there's a lot to be said for it, but it's just not a reliable. I think it's the handset. I don't think it's Android. I think it's the G1. I really had high hopes for this one too.
There was a lot of hype surrounding it too when it came out. One thing I would like to know as far as the Pre is it as fragile as the iPhone?
You think the iPhone's fragile?
I think so. I mean, I've seen so many. I've seen so many cracked screens.
My son. There's my we did a father son thing a couple of days ago. We jailbroke our iPhones together. It was really a nice moment.
That's so
touching,
sweet.
Touching
that's
moment. He says, "Dad, I want to learn how to hack." I said, "Well, let's start with jailbreaking."
You do it in that voice.
Yeah, Dad. I want to be Mikey.
I look up to Mikey.
I want to start a site and hack Twitter and make everybody go to my site. Can you help me? You know what? When he says that, both my kids say that. And I say, well, okay, first we got to learn bash shell programming. And that shuts him up right away.
That would, yeah.
Bash shell programming. But it's true, right? If you're going to be a hacker, you got to know the bash shell. Don't you think?
No, you could just be a script kitty.
No kid of mine is going to be a script kitty. Anyway, so we jailbroke it. And he found immediately an application that puts cracks on your screen when you touch it, and it really looks realistic. It so he goes up to his friends and say, "Oh, dude, I broke my iPhone," and they all go, "Oh man, it hurts you viscerally when you see that broken screen."
Oh, it
screen.
Is because it's shards of glass.
Oh, it's terrible.
Is just so painful to see that.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah, but I'm curious if this would be.
I don't think
this
is that vulnerable.
Will have a similar issue.
Yeah, you know, glass screens. You know.
Exactly.
Let's see. You know, I just Jason Calacanis keeps bugging me. He's in Korea and he wants to show off his bandwidth. So maybe we'll give him a jingle in a little bit.
Bandwidth in Korea is overrated.
Really? Because you came back singing its praises.
No,
you didn't.
No, not really. I think I was complaining.
Oh,
what? I think they talk a big game over there, and maybe at the university or someplace like that. I'd have some speed. But the funny thing was, I had, in fact, Ken Rutkowski, who took us over there, he was complaining bitterly. I have a video of him complaining about it. He says it's bogus. And then just out of the blue, like about 6 months ago, one of the guys, the network analysts over at Mevio, was giving a presentation showing the various speeds on the edge.
Yeah.
And Korea was the worst.
Well, edge is terrible. You mean they're
I'm talking about like at the Akamai network.
Oh, at the edge of the network. Oh,
the
really?
That, where you'd have all these, you know, where you're supposed to have all this boost. And it was the worst of all the countries internationally. And then, of course, I asked them about that. And they said, well, it's possible that, you know, because the Koreans don't do this or that, maybe it's just a fake number. But I doubt that the connection is going to be that good. You should, you know.
How interesting. This was like the big thing. Like they're the most wired nation. You know who really has a lot of bandwidth? Sweden.
Yeah, Sweden does have a lot of bandwidth. That's the first place I saw IPTV, and it was years ago, and it was just like cable TV. It was so good. You could click, click, click right through any channels. It was, you know, you wouldn't even know you weren't on cable TV.
Yeah.
Because it was 30 megs, like everywhere.
Many of our Swedish listeners say they've got 100 megs.
Yeah, well, it was 30 megs 3 years ago.
Yeah. Let's see. I think Jason's on the... Let me see if I can get Jason on the line here from... here, I have to twist his knobs. I don't even know which knob goes to which.
You probably like that.
Oh, it begins already. Jason, can you hear me? Oh, we lost his connection. I guess that great South Korean bandwidth failed us.
The irony. The irony.
The irony. Connection lost. I have no connection.
Sweden just has it all going on.
It's funny. I don't know what happened there. All right, moving on to yet another fascinating story. Did you see the journal article about... I guess we already kind of talked about spies in the grid, didn't we? That was we kind of talked about that peripherally at the very top of the show. The Zune HD. There's a good story.
Hmm.
Y'all excited?
Oh,
gosh.
Oh!
All right. This is a common topic for me. Something I've always hated: the cost of SMS messages. Mm. I once calculated that at the typical cost of 20 cents a message, 140-byte message, you're paying $1,500 a megabyte.
Seems high. You guys have such a remedial SMS system.
It's terrible. And, you know, the phone companies use this as a way to take advantage of us, basically.
It's true.
Mostly to take advantage of teenage girls.
Yes.
Well, you might be right, because Dina Christofferson of Cheyenne, Wyoming, got quite a surprise in the mail the other day. She's a Wyoming 13-year-old. Mom and dad thought that they had turned off text messaging on her phone, and as a result, they never ordered a text messaging plan. Oh, that was a big mistake.
That was a bad idea to begin with.
Dina sent or received 20,000 text messages in one
billing cycle?
Yes.
Does this girl speak, or does she
that
just text?
That means she's doing a 700 texts a day rate. More or less.
Well, remember, incoming counts as well as outgoing, right?
Well, still.
So you could subscribe to Twitter, for instance, and say, I want all my Twitter messages to come
in and out.
In and out, and boom, bing, bang. So,
you
want to take a guess at what her bill was?
Twitter users.
I'm going to go with around about $5,000.
Very good. Bingo. Were you reading the article? you.
Cheater.
It was $4,750. Her father, Greg Christofferson, told KUSA-TV in Denver that he thought texting had been disabled on the phone. When he got the bill, he took a hammer and smashed the phone into pieces.
That's discipline.
Dina will text no more. Oh, but I don't blame Dina on this. I blame Verizon.
Well, actually, I blame her parents for taking off text messaging altogether.
That was dumb, wasn't it?
That was just a bad idea. If your child has a text messaging problem.
Do you text a lot?
I do.
How much?
Not $5,000 worth.
Not 20,000 messages?
No. And I Twitter, like everything. No, I don't think I text that much. And even, you know, but you know who does text a lot are Indian people in India. Everyone is, it's all about SMSing there. There's no voicemail in India.
The Brits too, right? Everybody texts.
Well, actually, college kids in this country too.
Absolutely text like crazy. Which I think is because
there's voicemail in the UK though, right?
Yeah, everybody uses voicemail, but most people will interact with SMS. And it's because it doesn't cost you anything to receive an SMS over here.
Oh, I see. See, I think it's the same.
And most, and or you practically can't buy it. You can't buy a voice plan these days that doesn't come with messages built in. So you really, really struggle to spend a lot of money on texting. I mean, the iPhone comes with like, I don't know, 1,000 messages a month or something just as part of the plan.
I paid the $20 a month for unlimited texting, so I use it whenever I can.
Right.
Leo.
What?
You don't text. You don't answer email. You don't do anything. You just sit there and broadcast
like
all day.
A spider
yeah, he says whenever,
in my web.
Whenever he can, which is like, you know, once a day.
No, actually, I do. I use text messaging. I text my kids and stuff. Kids really do. You're right, John. College kids and even teenagers in the U.S. have discovered texting. For a long time, they did not text.
Even when I was in college, it wasn't that. And that was
it's
that.
Come on strong lately.
Now, I think it's huge. Back then, it wasn't as big.
Yeah.
The whole SMS thing.
Well, I believe me. I paid for unlimited for Henry. You know, Abby told me she's in France right now. And she says because it's so expensive to make cell phone calls, nobody makes calls. They text. That's all they do.
Yeah. I found this in India, too. I mean, I had a cell phone there and it was.
Is it pricey?
It is. I mean, it can be if you're roaming or if you're making an out of state call. It can be pricey. It's actually cheaper to just SMS somebody
right.
or have them call you or something like that. But there is no voicemail in India, so SMS is like the way to leave a message.
I don't get that. You mean you can't leave a message?
No, there's no voicemail.
Hmm. On landlines either? Do people have answering machines?
I'm not sure about landlines. Most people that I knew there have mobiles.
Now, they don't have landlines.
Not really.
Really? That's interesting. I thought they
Some
would have.
Some people do, but the mobile phone is much more common. Like everybody down to like my teeny tiny nieces and nephews have cell phones there.
Wow, that's wild.
You know, yeah. I think the one thing about texting that's interesting is really a very efficient way to communicate. You know, you have the text. Nobody wants to just crank out long messages, especially if they don't have a keyboard. But if you do have a keyboard, even you don't want to just keep typing and typing. So it's really, I think, you know, you set up an appointment, you go to meet somebody. It's just real quick and easy. And I think it's an outstanding way to communicate.
Well, that's exactly why I use it. I prefer it to, you know, Kevin Rose mentioned a few weeks ago on the show that he is now sending out with all of his emails this thing from three sentences, this 3.sentence.es. Mm-hmm. And it says, I only answer in three lines all my email. It's the same idea. It's like if 140 characters is enough for text, that's all you're getting
that's
from me.
True.
And he says it saves him a lot of time. I couldn't really do that. But texting is great in terms of efficiency.
Actually,
it is.
The best hack that I found for that was that, you know, if you're sending an email from a mobile device, most people are quite happy, you know, for the fact it's going to be punctuated badly.
Right.
And it's going to be short and it's going to be curt. So someone suggested to me that you just put on your desktop client as your signature, sent from BlackBerry or sent from iPhone. And then you can just send one line replies to everything.
I thought about that too. Because I said, why don't I just put that on there as my signature? Because then don't have to worry about the misspellings, you know.
But doesn't it still bother you? It still bothers me whenever I get like a really weird SMS.
But at least they have a reason.
But still, it still bothers me. Like I don't like when people over abbreviate things. Like it still bothers me.
You know what bothers me?
Like you just the letter U.
Yeah, and then they just start taking out vowels, and it's just Z's, and I just don't even know.
How old are you, Neha? You sound like a old.
When I was a kid, we used the whole word.
I know. I sound like a complaining old lady, but no, really, I can't handle it. It hurts my eyes to read.
Gosh, you're old fashioned for such a young person.
I guess so.
I rarely use vowels anymore.
I would say you and
all marketing people are, with products.
Do you remember John? Who was
number
it?
Two?
Was somebody we worked for at Ziff Davis. He was a young, hot executive. He and his wife worked there, and they ended up in New Mexico or Arizona. What was his name?
Oh, Ronnie Sonnenberg and Jeff Ballou.
Jeff Ballou, to prove what a busy executive he was, would never punctuate, never uppercase. All his emails were all lowercase with no periods. And that bugged the hell out of me because I knew that was a pose. That was like, I'm busy. I don't have time to punctuate.
Yeah. Actually, Bill Gates, I think that's amazing.
Bill Gates does that?
Too. Yeah, I think Ballmer, when I last time I got a note from him, it was kind of similar.
I don't like that.
I don't either.
I don't like that at all.
If you don't have time to send me a message, then just don't send it to me.
If you don't have time, there we go. Spell it properly. Don't spell it at all.
What the commas, where they belong.
And please, there's a difference between it's with an apostrophe and it's without.
Keep your thoughts to yourself.
We've got grammar girl Deha Tiwari with us today.
It's annoying. It hurts my eyes. I've deleted messages.
My
like
eyes.
I'm just like, forget it. I'm not reading this. This is garbage.
Wow. You wouldn't like my kids. In fact, you know, one of the reasons, Abby's very smart, but one of the reasons she didn't do so well in her, she got a 750 on her SAT verbal.
I'm glad the whole world knows.
Well, I'm proud of that. That's a good
number. It's very good.
But like a 590 on the written because she doesn't punctuate or spell. Uh-huh. Because she doesn't know how. But I kind of blame this, and I may be wrong, but I blame this on...
The schools.
Yeah. There was a fad called Whole Language. Do you remember that fad?
Whole Language?
Where they got kids writing like in second grade very early, and they said...
Oh, I vaguely remember
don't
this.
Don't pay attention to spelling. Don't pay attention to punctuation.
Is this like Montessori school stuff?
Kind of Montessori. It was a little... Okay. But you know, they taught in the public schools. It was like... It was a little touchy-feel. It was like, oh, no, we just want them to write. They don't have to worry about... And so she never studied phonetics. They didn't study phonetics and didn't do any of that stuff. And as a result, that's how she writes without punctuation and spelling. I think it was a mistake. She was
all these experimental things turn out to be mistakes.
I think you're right.
Or, you know, it could be spell check. That's ruining the youth.
Well, that's one of the things she says is that, well, they didn't have spell check at the SATs. What was I supposed to do?
Well, my mom used to say that when I used to do math was, oh, you people with your calculators, you'll never learn math.
What did she learn in an abacus? What did she use?
No, but I guess, well, because she was raised in India, and I guess they're really big on teaching you, like, your multiplication tables to, like, 50.
Wow.
And she can, like, calculate and compute things in her head that are amazing. Like, she's just like a math whiz.
Big article, actually, in the Times today about Google. This is that same article we've seen over and over again from the tech sector saying we need more H-1B visas. There, you know, there are people in America, kids are not getting well educated. We need more students from India in particular, China, to be able, they come here to college and then we don't let them come here to work. And Google said we could hire, you know, we could get the engineers we need, but they won't let us. They won't give us visas. And they highlighted one Google engineer who did have a visa to work in the United States, but his wife, they're both Indian nationals. His wife did not. So they live in Canada because he can't work here. He's in the Google Maps division. He works out of the Google sales office in Vancouver.
Hmm.
I tell you, you know, something interesting. When I was in Delhi, we had to fill out some paperwork at the consulate there. And it was interesting because, you know, you see lines for every country there. The longest line was for the United States. I mean, they had the UK, they had, you know, all kinds of random countries. They're all in the same area. But the very longest line was for the United States.
People want to come here. They want to study.
They want to come here. Everyone in the line was very, like, young, I would say.
I think it's interesting because we do have, a crappy secondary school system.
Yeah.
But we have a very good college system. We probably have the best university system in the world. Oddly enough, I don't know how that happened. So kids, they go to school in India, they learn their math.
Yeah.
With the abacus. Yeah. And then they go to college in the States.
Yeah.
But they're not allowed to stay here and work. And I have a cousin
who's actually doing that. He's getting his master's in engineering at the University of Florida. And he's very smart. But, you know, he can't stay here after he's done with it.
Kiwi Nerd, who's a professor of physics at the University of Toronto, says very succinctly, private wealth, public squalor. I guess that's true, although you went to University of California, which is a very good public school, state-run school.
One of the best schools
in the country.
And I thought the education was quite good. And I had a lot of friends who were in the EECS program, or the Electrical Engineering Computer Science program. Very competitive.
You're a Cal fan, right, John?
I went to Cal, too.
Yeah.
All right.
He was in.
I got my degree in history. I bailed out of the engineering side of things. I couldn't handle it. And
it's very competitive.
It's too competitive.
It's very hard.
Was it like that in the 50s when you went there?
No social life. They come over here and boom, they just kick your ass. What are you supposed to do?
Yeah. You were there in the late 60s, mid 60s.
I was there back in the 20s.
Were there
the school back when I went.
Were there a lot of Asian students there when you went there?
It was all in the engineering. It was all Asians, all from China. And they just basically worked all day and worked all night. They never went out. They never went on dates. They never showed up at parties. They never did anything.
They said,
you know, work and study, work and study, work and study, and go back to China. And then next thing you know, we're like getting D's and they're, you know, marching off.
There's still many students who are, even in my day when I was there, there was a lot of that as well. Foreign students.
I think it's worse now. I was actually surprised to hear it was that way even back in the
dark ages. I didn't know that either.
Oh yeah. Always, now it's actually more Asian because they've got sick of the white kids coming in there and then causing riots.
I'm going to pose a question, then I'm going to take a break. But the question, you may baste your leg of lamb, John, but the question I'm going to pose you is, well, if you were going to graduate school today and you had your choice of anything you would like to study, what would be the number one, the fastest growing graduate school profession, the one, you know, that has the best future? This is going to shock you. We'll talk about it in just a second. But first, I want to mention my friends at GoToMyPC. These are the folks at Citrix. GoToMyPC is a very, very cool remote access program. It's really, as far as I'm concerned, the best remote access out there. GoToMyPC.com. It has to be. You know, there are free choices. I know there are free choices out there for you for remote access. So how does somebody create a product that you pay for? By making it easier to use, by making it faster, by making it work on any computer, anywhere, and absolutely securely. There have been a lot of remote access exploits you might have read about in the last few months. Not go to my PC. These guys know what they're doing. It is totally secure, 128-bit SSL encryption. The beauty of go to my PC is complete NAT traversal. The way it works is you can do it right now. Go to gotomypc.com/twit. That's the website. gotomypc.com/twit. And for free, you can sign up for 30 days. Now, here's the beauty. It takes a couple of minutes to sign up. You'll notice immediately, I didn't have to configure the router. I don't have to open ports. No. You may for the other guys, you don't, because it's using full NAT traversal. Now, anywhere you go, anywhere you can get online, whether it's at home, you go home early, whether it's an internet cafe, even a sketch internet cafe in India, at Agra, whether it's an airport or a hotel, you log on to gotomypc.com. You have a 128-bit SSL encrypted connection. They pass you on to your office computer. You are now point-to-point encrypted to your office computer. You could do anything you would do if you were sitting there. You see it full screen. So you can send and receive email, run programs, access resources. Effectively a VPN. By the way, you could surf the net too completely securely, even in the most sketch of places. PC World gave it their world-class award for best remote access software. It's that good. If you know, sometimes people worry about security in new technologies. If you've been worried, maybe the example they use is online banking. It took people a while to feel like it was safe to do that. If you've been worried about that, let me tell you, the security on GoToMyPC is the best you can get. And Citrix knows this stuff. Fast, easy, secure. It's a simple pitch. I want you to try it free for 30 days. Go to GoToMyPC.com/twit and try it absolutely free. So newspapers are going under, magazines going under, the blogger, it's the age of the blogger. So according to the Pew Research Center, 5,000 newspaper jobs gone in 2008. Since 2001, more than 10,000 journalists out of work, 47,000 unemployed, and yet journalism programs cannot make enough room for new journalism students. Columbia, Stanford, and NYU applications up 38%, 20%, and 6% respectively from the previous year. University of Colorado up 11%. University of North Carolina up 14%. Maryland up 25%. What's going on? People are spending, the average price for graduate school, including living expenses, $31,000 a year. The best they could hope for, getting a job, $40,000 a year as a journalist, and there aren't that many jobs. What are they thinking? Would you go to J school today? Nehar, did you study in college?
I have a confession to make.
What?
I actually applied to grad school.
For journalism?
To one at Berkeley?
Yep.
Why?
And I practically was basically waitlisted, and they told me to reapply next term.
Because it was oversold.
Yeah, but you know what? Now I'm kind of like, what was I thinking? Do I really want to be that much in debt 2 years from now? Like, do I seriously want, why did I even make that decision? I think grad school is a great thing, and I think I did it because at that time I felt like that would be the right thing to do. But, you know, I'm not shocked. I think what's happening here is I think a lot of people feel like, okay, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like a journalist, or I'm whatever.
You think
blogger.
It's bloggers who do this, who say, I just want to get
I think, okay, well, I need a little bit more cred so I can go to J school, buy me some cred. Okay.
At $31,000 a year.
At $31,000, be in debt that I'll never pay off with my $45,000 job that I get out of grad school. But, you know, I couldn't tell you what personally I was thinking when I decided to apply to J school.
I think it's great. I'd love to see bloggers and online journalists have that training, I guess. Why, John, what do you think? What's going on?
I've taught it to Cal, not as a professor, but as a guest lecturer when Markoff and Greg Zachary were teaching at Cal. And of course, then they began teaching at Stanford. And it's interesting because the students that come through there are kind of generational. Every group is different. But I don't know what the value of it would be to a blogger. I think that you couldn't get elsewhere. And the other thing is, it's like there's nothing like on the job training. I mean, taking a bunch of graduate courses in journalism is different than getting a job at a newspaper or someplace where you actually have people yelling at you.
That's a good point.
That's a very good point. There's more patience.
That's like going to the Columbia School of Broadcasting than becoming a DJ. There's not.
Yeah, or even the Paul Allen School of Broadcasting was more valuable generally because you were on the air for years. And
I got my degree at the Paul Allen School of Broadcasting.
I don't know. I was just saying that, you know, nothing works like experience, especially when it comes to writing.
Is that going to count in any way?
I don't think it's going to do you any good at this
point. What about
point.
Ethics? What about learning, kind of the collected wisdom of journalists over the years? Isn't there something to be gained?
They teach you that in undergrad, too. I mean, one of my core classes in my mass comm major was an ethics course.
I'm glad to hear that.
You know,
I mean, that's one thing you could say bloggers don't have.
That's true.
I would think that undergraduate journalism, I don't know what the point of the graduate school is. I mean, undergrad, one or two courses in journalism, you know, as an undergrad and working on the school paper, and you can always get I wrote for the Daily Cal, and is really all you really need. From then on, you can just, either pick it up on the job or whatever. The problem is that in the United States, everybody wants to think of journalism as a profession, Whereas in most of the rest of the world, in England in particular, it's thought of as a trade.
It's a trade.
It's true.
I'm a bricklayer.
And it's like, yeah, well, that's what it is. And it's not rocket science. And I don't think you have to be a genius to be a writer. It's kind of a dumb job. I mean,
it's,
you know,
skill.
But
it's completely skill.
It's a craft in that sense.
It's
a craft in that sense, right?
Because it has both of those.
Yeah.
It's like being a painter.
Now, academics. I guess you're the wrong guy to ask here, Will Harris, because you went to school to be a lawyer. A lot of good that did you.
I don't get it now. Since
the barrister Will Harris will now respond for the Crown.
But I, you know, I think that it's a lot of the sort of up, you know, because I see a lot an uptick in people wanting to do journalism. I think it's because a lot of you know, teenagers and school kids are getting a taste for publishing online and for having their stuff, you know, read and having their thoughts put out there. And it makes them think about journalism in a way, you know, it's blogging and, you know, the sort of social media revolution and such has kind of made journalism a bit sexier, possibly, than it was before. You know, a bit more attractive to people to get involved with. However, I absolutely agree with John that, you know, taking a postgrad journalism course is kind of mental at this point. You'd be far better off just going and getting a job, getting, you know, any kind of job, any kind of freelance, posting your own essays to your blog and then using that to, you know, get yourself a gig somewhere is far more valuable actual experience than going and getting a grad course, for sure.
And let's mention one more thing about journalism, colleges, schools, or whatever, like the Columbia School of Journalism. Originally, they were brought in to professionalize the trade, and it was done in a way. And in fact, most people that really take a lot of journalism and get a degree in it. It was designed to create cogs for cogs in the wheel. So you'd have like a neutral writing style with no voice. You weren't really a writer. You were a journalist. You were a reporter. You knew how to do it. You could work at any newspaper. You would fit right into the scheme of things. You know, you weren't a columnist. You weren't somebody trying to express themselves. You were just this cog in the wheel. You were trained and like a lawyer to do, you know, to be able to do a job anywhere. And that was the idea. And so you end up with a whole bunch of people that are overtrained in journalism. And this is a controversial thing I'm saying. Some people will deny it. But the fact is, very few of them can do much more than report. They're good reporters, but they're not, you know, authors. They're very few of them become novelists. A few of them can break away from it. But generally speaking, they write in a voiceless style that anybody can read. It's fairly neutral. And they're taught this, you know, the principles of neutrality, even though it's hard to maintain. And it doesn't apply anymore. The whole world's changed. This is not going to fly. We think that probably partisan writing is going to probably, you know, return to the fore, which it was in the 1800s, where, you know, newspapers used to be like the Press Democrat. It used to be, on one side of an issue, and there were papers of the Independent, is, you know, that kind of thing. Everybody had a political perspective in these papers, and that's where it's headed with blogging.
It's also where it's heading with television. I mean, gosh, you wouldn't start a news channel unless you could figure out where you were, right, left, or center.
Right.
These days.
I think it's interesting, too, because when I was talking to them to see, like, what they were looking for, it's not – I mean, my experience is mostly in the kind of the internet spectrum. All the writing that I've done has been in that kind of blogging creative style. And ultimately, it seems like the board or whoever's deciding who gets admission into grad school – they're looking for people who are like newspaper journalists or people who are much more traditional, which was fascinating to me because that's not the future. So,
what year was that?
Within the last 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was eye opening for me, and it made
you're
me
lucky, like, you didn't get in. To be honest with you,
I'm thinking so.
You would spend a lot of money and getting trained in a profession that's dying.
Exactly, and I don't think that I really need. Perhaps I did not. I don't really need that training, and I got it working at places.
Yeah.
You know,
my daughter said she wants to learn the family business by going to Emerson and studying the broadcast program. And I said, that ain't this family's business. I don't know what business that is. What do you think? Your dad is Johnny, you know, Walker?
It might be fun to go to, like, I mean, if I was, you know, thinking about it and I had to go to a big school, like, you know, maybe San Diego State, which has a good broadcasting program, or UCLA, USC for, you know, maybe a movie career. But, you know, I would just say, just go to, you know, for people that just are floating around, if they can find a good junior college, like, you know, College of San Mateo, and just go there for, you know, a year and just take broadcasting and, you know, a few other things like that and work in the studio because they're on the air. I mean, this is that's the closest that station is as good as almost anything going on around the Bay Area.
Yeah.
It's actually surprisingly good.
I really wonder. I mean, we're in such a state of flux now, but I really wonder if you have such an opportunity now to get your chops in the actual environment, whether it's doing a podcast or video streaming or on a blog writing. It almost seems like that's the best way to learn. And isn't that how journalists used to learn? It was a trade.
Yeah, they used to learn, but they used to be taken under somebody's wing.
It was
let's
apprenticeship.
Say.
Yeah.
But right here, I mean, let's face it, your little operation over there is not coming from some guy who doesn't know anything, who's never been around the block, who's never worked in the business, who doesn't have a broadcasting background. It's like extremely professional for a reason. Other people I've seen, I don't see anybody else bringing up, you know, their game up to the level that you have that are rank amateurs and don't have any help whatsoever from anybody.
You're right. There needs to be more mentoring going on. And I've always mentored as much as I can and invited people in and said, here's how we do it and given them feedback. I mean, yeah. I think that that's important. I remember when I got into broadcasting, you know, I never went to broadcast school. I just did it and I was pretty awful for the first 5 years. And I remember trying to get
school was this 5 years?
No, I didn't go to school. I mean, it was the School of Hard Knocks. Can I be honest? I was terrible for the first 10 years I was on the air. I was one of those guys, you know. Hey, welcome to the show. We're going to have a great show for you. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to play a little music from Steely Dan. But right now, it's the Doobie Brothers. Jesus is just all right.
You had the total announcer
me.
Voice.
I like and, it. You should go back to that.
Maybe that was my future. Anyway, I do remember when I was starting out, that there was this ethos that the people who are doing it right now would take you under their wing and teach you and bring you up. And I think that they always said to me, you know, I'm going to take you under my wing. I'm going to mentor you. I'm going to show you what I know at broadcasting, but you got to pass it along. You got to pass it, pay it forward.
And
I think that's true.
I think it's very true. And I think, I mean, I feel very lucky to have had mentors, just mentors that I made actually at Tech TV. I mean,
Wasn't me. I was walking around my underwear drunk by the time you got there.
No, I mean, like, for example, like Sarah Lane has been
great.
A mentor to me. Even
well,
at
I mentored
Revision
her,
3.
So it all works out. You know?
Yeah, and even at Revision 3, she mentored me as well. I still look up
there
to her.
There is
and I,
that spirit, isn't there?
There still is that spirit, and there's been people who are interns that when I worked at Revision 3, I tried to, you know, pass on the torch and teach them whatever I know too.
I wonder if the ShamWow guy has taken mentees on, because I'm thinking that might be my future.
I think you'd be great.
I'd love to do that. Hey, camera guy, look at this. I'd love to do that.
Yeah. You're kind of doing that anyway.
Yeah, I am a pitch guy. There's a certain amount of that has to happen. You know, Monster Cable is at it again. They are suing a company called Monster Transmission. Now, I don't know why you would get confused.
Monster Transmission.
That when you go to Monster Transmission and Performance in Florida, that you would think you're maybe buying high-priced, overpriced cables from Monster Cable. Remember, they also sued.
Well,
Monster,
you know, here
Mini-Golf?
It is. I think I got the answer. The cables transmit data and electricity, and so transmission is a word that they could employ in their sales pitch, and so someone might be confused. By Monster Transmission.
I learned a little bit about this. We have a lawyer now because there are a few companies that are doing streaming stuff with the word twit. And while the Twitter is, you know, a different area. You know, they have a trade. Actually, they don't. You know what else I found out? They don't have a trademark yet.
Oh, that's interesting.
it's been pending for a couple of years. I don't know what's going on. Anyway. So we want to stop people from doing any streaming media or podcasts or, you know, any audio entertainment or video entertainment under the name Twit of any kind, even if it's about Twitter. So I talked to the lawyer and he said the only way you can sue in this case is if people could be reasonably confused about what they're getting, you know?
Yeah.
So if somebody does Twit shoes, there's no confusion. It's a different business. Nobody's thinking they're getting Twit the podcast or Twitter the microblog when they buy Twit shoes. So I don't know how Monster even can justify this. It's just out of...
It seems far-fetched.
It's also bad PR. The whole geek community is down on these guys now.
Well...
It's not the first time, though.
What real geek would use their stuff? That's true. It's just expensive.
That's a good point.
It's overpriced.
They apparently want to own the name Monster, so you're not going to hear any Monster podcasts coming out of here, that's for sure.
The Monster movie.
Monster microblogging service.
Monster microblogging. Yeah, I just go to monoprice.com. They've never sued anybody.
Yeah.
You know, the worst for this is Intel. Intel is absolutely dreadful at going around and trying to sue anybody that has, you know, the word Intel in any context in the domain name or their company. And of course, you know, Intel's really commonly used as like an abbreviation for intelligence, like for the intelligence community. Right. So there's all kind of websites that are all about, you know, next generation Intel or whatever .com, and they get sued out of existence. By Intel.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Intel has some of the most hardcore trademark and copyright guys around. That you can Google any number of websites that have got sort of kind of valid Intel complaints.
On
that note.
No, there's a couple of more notes.
Okay.
you want to go baste your lamb? Go ahead.
Yeah.
There's a couple more notes. One is... I don't think we talked about this last week. Maybe we did. Actually, I did. We did talk about Time Warner lowering these caps, introducing 50 gigabyte caps in some countries, or some counties or cities, some regions in the United States, which is a ridiculously low number. But now it comes out that they perhaps are going to offer tier pricing. So this is kind of a 1-2 punch. They first tell places like Austin, Texas, we're going to limit you to 50 gigabytes a month. And then they say, oh, but if you're willing to pay $150, you can have unlimited download. We've kind of gone back and forth about this before, John, you and I. Does that seem like a good solution to bandwidth caps, is just tier the pricing? And
that's always been your argument.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've always wanted to do that. So you're trying to get me to drop my argument.
No, I don't want it to be that way. But I think that if you are going to offer caps, you've got to have some rational tiering going on. I mean, 50 gigabyte cap is ridiculous, John. You couldn't watch, you couldn't listen to all my shows if you had a 50 gigabyte cap.
I don't know. I have a cap. I have a meter on my system, and it monitors my usage. And I think, and I'm a pretty heavy user. I don't listen to all your shows. I mean, I should. But
yeah, you should.
But
all your shows either.
Max 30 gigs a month. Max. I can't make myself get more than 30 gigs a month.
Really? All right. Well, they're planning. They say 30% of our customers use less than a gigabyte. They're going to offer a $15 a month high speed internet. Well, relatively high speed. Download speeds of 768 kilobits. Upload 128 kilobits for $15 a month. I think that's great. But if you go over that gigabyte, it's $2 a gigabyte additional. They will also have a 10 gigabyte, 20 gigabyte, 40 gigabyte, and 60 gigabyte caps. And and 100 for, let's say you want 100 gigabytes, $75 a month, 10 megabits per second, uploads at 1 megabit. This to me kind of makes sense. I have to say this is the way to handle it. What is your argument? You think it should be unlimited? What?
Me?
No, you don't, do you?
No, I thought it should be charged by the bit, but that's a reasonable solution.
Instead of charging by the bit, just say, you know, here's your max.
Yeah, there are people that don't use it a lot. They just use email. Why are they paying these high, ridiculous prices? I think they should have fast access. You know, everyone should have the same, you know, blazing speeds. And if you're not going to use it that much, you know, you shouldn't be paying for it. I mean, I feel sorry for people that, you know, you got one guy next door who's just hogging bandwidth and going crazy and downloading everything they can. And then somebody else who just does email. I mean, why are they paying the same amount?
I think that's right.
Makes no sense.
I'm actually coming around to your way of thinking. Your position was, well, it costs the companies money. I don't think it costs them as much as they'd like you to think it costs them. It costs the companies money to offer better service. So charge for better service. I don't think that's such a bad thing.
Do you think that people are going to get caught up in the overages, though?
Yeah, I worry about that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I would worry about that, too.
That can end up expensive, depending on...
I mean, that's what happens with cell phone plans.
I just hate, you know. I hate the whole concept of having an overage and an overage fee.
I want unlimited. I would buy whatever the unlimited was.
Because I just don't want to be limited by anything.
Right.
And with this, even though it's tier and... perhaps it's better for people who just check their email or have very minimal usage. But for those who have kind of normal use, it's...
Well, you know, it seems to me the way it should be done, if you're going to use tiered, is that if you have a low tier and you're subscribing and blah, 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 and you all of a sudden jump to the overage mark, you should just be billed for the next tier. I don't see.
Yeah, it shouldn't be like an incremental overage thing, which is what this is.
Which I'm describing is similar to my charge by the bit thing, because essentially you'd have to pay more because you jumped over some sort of a plateau.
So I think this is sensible. So the top of the line service is $75 a month. For that, you get 100 gigabytes, as I mentioned, at 10 megabits per second down and one up, but $1 extra per gigabyte capped at 75. So now, by the way, they say this is just, we're trying this out. This is not the, you know, this may all change. But they say, so that's what I would probably get. I would get the $75 a month service. That's kind of the top of the line service, knowing it could never go over $150, even if I just used a ton of bandwidth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I recommend people go on the net and find some of these meters so you can meter your own usage.
Where do you
take
get
a look
that?
At what you use?
Yeah. Where do you,
it's on the other computer at the other house.
I like that idea.
Yeah, that's a great solution to this.
Yeah, it sits there and it's just meters, but it only meters on that machine. It doesn't meter the whole network, I suppose, as someone that would.
I'd love a meter that would meter everything coming into this room.
Yeah, there's probably something. I mean, if you look around, there are meters, and they're just, you know, essentially counting bits as it flies across the network.
Right. I mean, we use a ton of bandwidth here. Ton of bandwidth.
Yeah, but there's probably some sniffer that would do it.
What's your internet cost you, Will? Will's sinking. You're getting lower and lower on the screen. I think that Sansara's gotten to you.
It's all kicking in. You know what? It's like 20 quid a month. 20 quid a month, I think, for 10 down, 1 up.
That's pretty good. And is there a bandwidth cap?
Not bad.
If there is, I've never encountered it. It's one of those things where they call it unlimited, but with like fair use.
Right.
And your fair use is never really quite defined. Right. But I download quite a lot, as you might expect, and I've never really encountered it.
Well, you and I are kind of in the same business. We offer rich bandwidth content. You channel flip is, if people downloaded everything you did, that could add up. So you have a dog in this hunt. I mean, you must care a little bit.
Well, what we have over here that's kind of interesting is that, I don't have a bandwidth cap, but routinely packages are sold on the amount that you can download. So most people, if they buy the standard package from, you know, the standard operator, will have like a 10 gigabyte cap. And that's just like, you know, they'll pay 10 quid a month, they'll get 10 gig, and that's it. They might pay 15 quid a month and get 50 gig, and that's it. And they might pay 20 quid and get an unlimited cap. There's no differentiator in speed, only in the amount that you can download. But we tend to not see any effect of that, though, because the people who really want the extra bandwidth will just pay the extra 5 quid and get it.
Wow. Hey, I was just seeing Guardian 653 in our chat room. He's using the Tomato router, which is firmware. We actually run the firmware on our Linksys WRT54G, and it does monitor your monthly bandwidth use. He says he listens to most of the shows, watches most of the shows live on Twit, 92 gigabytes a month.
Mm.
So it's possible.
Get out of the house, for God's sake.
Get some sunshine.
You know, I look at the graphs of the data, that we're, you know, sucking for people watching on, you know, we have three channels now, Ustream, Stickam, and BitGravity. And we're doing 2 or 3 terabytes a day now in video. So if I had to pay for that, I'd be in real trouble.
That's a lot of video.
That's a lot of video. A lot of video. All right, I'm going to 200 gigabytes at the warehouse. Colleen says she meters you with the tomato. You use the tomato probably to meter the warehouse, and that's a bunch of users. How many different users where she lives? 3 different users. 200 gigabytes a month.
See,
I don't want to know what you guys are. You're BitTorrent. You're using BitTorrent, aren't you? That's without BitTorrent. Wow, that's excluding the BitTorrent traffic. She says they do it, not her. We want to make that perfectly clear.
Colleen doesn't use torrents.
Neha, it's so nice to see you, to meet
it was
you.
So nice
although
to,
I guess
to re-meet.
I met you once when yes. I was wandering around drugged and out of my head. The last, the final days of
I don't
tech
know what
TV.
They were doing to you on the
Well, the electroshock
there.
Was really getting to me after a while, I have to say.
Yeah, it's been great just being here. It feels like home. So
well, it is. Consider it your home. I hope we can do this new show with you. I'd love to do it. I'm very excited about it.
It would be great. It would be really fun, and I'd like to come back sometime. And it's been really great interacting with everybody in the IRC chat. It's been
thank you for
really
going
good,
in there. They
really
get
good meeting everybody, and I hope you all... You know, keep in touch and stuff.
NehaTiwari.com. NehaTiwari.com.
Yeah. And also this week, I probably will be doing a segment on DLTV. So
that's cool. So DLTV is back up.
It's back up. Yes. It's going to be a new format that they're trying out.
Will Robert Heron still be involved?
He's still involved. It's going to be a twice weekly offering. And so I should hopefully be on the Thursday.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Thursday
to hear
edition.
That.
So I'm just doing some stuff there. Because I like it, like the people that work at DLTV very much. So and obviously I'm going to be Colleen and I are going to try to work out and get Void up and started, which should be super rad.
V01D.TV.
Yeah, so that's coming to an internet's near you.
Maybe this internet, right?
Maybe
here.
Maybe this one right here. Yeah,
I told you, I'd be glad to foot the bill on that.
Yeah, and it'll be all about interactivity. I mean, that's something that I'm hacking. Really big on, as
first
you guys
one,
could tell.
They're going to do a multi-touch projector-based multi-touch display.
Yeah, and really, I mean, it's for all levels of nerds. So
very
don't
cool.
don't feel frightened or don't feel like too like oh this is so basic. It's good for all. So and also I'm on Twitter also. So, at Nehalia, N-E-H-A-L-I-A. Okay, I'm done plugging.
At Nehalia.
Follow me.
N-E-H-A-L-I-A. Will Harris is at Will Harris with one L. You'll also find him at Channel Flip. Is that going well?
Indeed you will. At Channel Flip. It's going very well. We've been delighted to have... do you guys in America know a comedian called David Mitchell?
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
Mm-mm.
Okay, very famous in the UK for being... on the BBC, and he's the sort of UK version of John Hodgman, I suppose, really. In fact, he was the PC in the UK version of the Mac and PC ads. Anyway, he's been doing a weekly series for us on Channel Flip, and it's been the most popular thing on iTunes for the past 2 months.
Congratulations.
Which is delightful to be beating out, you know, the BBC and all such other comers to be at the top of the iTunes chart. So, That's very pleasing. We also have a podcast, a new one with Rob Llewellyn.
He's doing Carpool, right? Is that part of your?
So he does Carpool, but also does a weekly one for us called Machine of the Week, which is a weekly look at the coolest kind of electric vehicles and latest car tech, which is very good fun.
So cool.
So you can watch both of those. Either you can get them through iTunes on the Channel Flip section on iTunes, or you can just go to channelflip.com and watch them.
Please give my best to Bobby Liu, because I'm so glad Red Dwarf came, the new Red
Will
Dwarf.
Will do.
I hear great
Will
things
do.
About it. That's neat. That's really exciting. Thank you, Will Harris. Channelflip.com. John C. Dvorak is at channeldvorak.com. I think in no small way influenced by channelflip.com.
Actually, get that out of the blue.
Channel,
but maybe, yeah, no, yeah, absolutely, because I'm a big fan of Channel Flip. Now,
oh, you're a sweetheart.
Yeah, the real Dvorak. I need some more numbers on my thing. It's
just at the real Dvorak on Twitter. Yep,
at the real Dvorak.
And we thank the folks on Friend Feed because we are now doing kind of a Friend Feed room in our Twit Conversations room for every show, and it's a great way to interact, but also after the fact to go back, see what people were saying, and add your own comments to the show. Friendfeed.com/twit-conversations is the place to see that. We remind you that we are on iTunes like everybody else. Just search for Twit in the iTunes store. We have a lot of different shows, including this one. If you subscribe, you'll get it every week. Twit Picks is online, too, at twit.tv/picks. Colleen picks great stuff that we mention on the shows and gives you a chance to pick it up and support Twit at the same time. Not in all cases. Sometimes we don't make any money off it, but if it's on Amazon, we get the Amazon associate fee. And I'm not going to tell you my Twitter handle because I don't care. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Leo's beyond it.
I'm over that. I'm so over Twitter. Another Twit
This is amazing.
Is in the can.